You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Because I think a lot of these people, deep down, they do suspect, well, maybe it is a scam, because it is a little bit strange that he's never come round to visit and he's never telephoned me and he's never done a Zoom call and he hasn't got enough money for his flight back home. But there's a tiny chance that it's true.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to N2K CyberWire's Hacking Humans podcast, where each week we look behind the social engineering scams, phishing schemes, and criminal exploits that are making headlines and taking a heavy toll on organizations around the world. I'm Dave Bittner, and joining me is Joe Kerrigan from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Dave.
We got some good stories to share this week, and later in the show, the illustrious, the one and only, Graham Cluley from Smashing Security joins me to talk about some of the trends that he's been tracking in online scams.
Graham, if you're listening, I'm the one that called you illustrious.
We'll be right back. But first, a word from our sponsors at KnowBefore. Time travel would be a particularly powerful tool in the hands of any overworked InfoSec professional. Think about it. Being able to see the future and know which malicious emails would be missed by all the existing filters. Your ability to stay one step ahead of the bad actors would rise to a whole new level. Unfortunately, our sponsors haven't cracked time travel just yet. They are, however, introducing a new phishing protection product that can block and remove dangerous phishing emails before your users even see them. Stay with us, and in a few minutes, you'll learn how. All right, Joe, before we dig into our stories here, we have a little bit of follow-up.
We do indeed.
I don't know, I think it was a couple episodes ago, you and I were talking about oxygen.
Right.
And we were wondering why oxygen requires a prescription here in the U.S. anyway.
Yes.
As it is so readily available. It's practically in the air we breathe.
It is in the air we breathe. In fact, Dave, there's some oxygen there right go. There. Why do we need a prescription for that, Dave?
We had a couple people write in about this, but I do appreciate that. Thank you, everyone, for sending in the information. But even better than that, one of my N2K colleagues here, Gina Johnson, who joined me because she knew all about what goes on and why you need a prescription for oxygen. So here's my conversation with Gina Johnson. So I am joined here by Gina Johnson, who works with me here at N2K CyberWire. She is in our operations department with that team, making sure that all the stuff happens behind the scenes in the ways that it should happen. Gina, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be here.
So in our recent episode, Joe and I were wondering, mostly Joe was wondering, why do we need a prescription for oxygen? And you heard that episode, and you got in touch with me behind the scenes and said, aha, I have an answer. So what is the answer here? Why a prescription for oxygen?
So it does seem silly that you would need a prescription for air. But oxygen is considered a medication by the FDA, and there's a reason for this. When you breathe in room air, and oxygen makes up about 21% of that.
Okay.
In the ordinary course of events, your body knows what to do with that 21% oxygen that you're taking in.
Right.
People who need oxygen therapy need it because their body isn't utilizing the oxygen or can't process the oxygen out of the air appropriately. And when that happens, your brain sort of becomes used to that oxygen deprivation. So your oxygen requirements they seem greater, but they're a little bit less. Oxygen supplementation comes with a whole bunch of risks. And one of those is oxygen toxicity.
Oh.
That causes a lot of nasty things. It ultimately can lead to brain damage. So when you're prescribed this oxygen therapy, you're prescribed it at a specific rate. When you get oxygen supplementation, a lot of people get things like oxygen tanks. You see people carrying them around.
Right.
You described that your mother needed an oxygen concentrator, which just pulls that oxygen out of the room air, concentrates it, and delivers it purely to the patient.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's requirements are different. You may have noticed that there are settings on the concentrators that deliver a certain flow rate per minute. You need to have that dialed in. And you can't just do that, you know, coming off the street and saying, hey, I need a tank of oxygen.
Right. Okay.
So these things are delivered through companies that are contracted with a hospital or a healthcare system. Through a durable medical equipment, and it comes with this long list of things that you need to do, do's and don'ts, like don't smoke around your oxygen tank,
right.
Don't shut your tubing in a door, don't let your kids play with it, things like that. Having prescriptions kind of allows for these controls.
Yeah. It's interesting because I guess part of it is that the point is, it's not pure oxygen that you're getting, you know, through that mask or, you know, through those little, in other words, your body isn't ending up with a stream of only oxygen, right? It's a mix. It's more oxygen than you get out of air.
Correct.
But you're still getting other stuff in there, and too much oxygen can be a bad thing.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, in light of this conversation that we're having right now, I did notice that over the weekend I went to Lowe's and saw these little, it almost looked like a mini oxygen tank.
Yes.
With a mask.
Yes. I mentioned that in my conversation with Joe, that I saw those at Dick's Sporting Goods. They had them where you check out.
Yeah.
Like, what is this?
Yeah. I meant to grab one just to look at it and kind of see what the deal is and how they were able to bypass these regulations with the FDA and stuff. I guess, much like your multivitamin that you pick up off the shelf, they consider it a supplement.
Mm.
I wonder. It was like interesting.
You see, professional athletes on this, sitting on the sidelines, sucking oxygen, right? You see, in airports, they'll have oxygen bars. So there must be a little bit of loosey-goosey or maybe a workaround? I don't know.
I meant to try and maybe kind of spend a little bit of time over the weekend sort of taking a deeper dive because, Dave, if you know me, if it's medical or biological, I'm pulling on my nerd glasses and taking a deep dive into this stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess that's going to be my homework for the week, and I'm going to follow up this follow-up.
Okay, fair enough.
to see why the heck you can buy oxygen tanks at Dick's Sporting Goods and Lowe's.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if it's something, you know, or medical grade or not, you know, if that makes all the difference in the world.
I very highly doubt it. I suspect maybe it's, you know, got some other components into it that makes it not pure oxygen.
Right. Right.
It stuck out to me. But yeah, the long and short of it is that, you know, oxygen in any respect is not something to be trifled with. Mm. And, you know, doctors want to make sure that the patients who do need it are getting it appropriately and it's not going to cause harm to them.
Yeah. All right. Well, Gina Johnson, thank you so much for stopping by the studio to help give us a better understanding of what's going on here.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Interesting, huh, Joe?
Yes. Oxygen toxicity.
Yeah.
Didn't even consider that. Now, I don't know why I didn't consider that. I know I'm well aware of water toxicity or water intoxication.
Right.
That can be fatal.
Yeah.
And I guess oxygen toxicity can be, too. That too much of anything is not good for you. That's kind of why they call it too much.
But
I was unaware there is such a thing as too much oxygen and that these things have to be regulated in the sense you regulate a gas, like with a regulator, into your body. So I guess that's more regulated in the sense that you have to regulate drugs from a government standpoint as with prescriptions. So it makes sense.
Yeah. One of our listeners wrote in and mentioned, in addition to what Gina had to say, that if you have particular lung diseases like COPD or cystic fibrosis,
right,
too much oxygen can override your breathing reflex.
Really?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, that sounds awful.
Would not want to do that.
No. So, again, thank you, folks, for writing in, and thank you, Gina, for taking the time. It's interesting stuff.
Yeah, the one thing that really concerns me is I've been to conferences or you know, like, I don't know, group meetings, you know, big events where there are people that have oxygen bars.
Right.
And they just hand you a hose. And I've put that hose underneath my nose and breathed in whatever it was they were giving me.
Right.
Which, who knows what that was?
Yeah.
I don't think I'll be doing that again. That was very trusting of me.
Yeah. Did you have a security clearance at the time, Joe?
No.
Okay, good.
I did not. I do remember that clearly.
Yeah. All right. Well, again, thank you, Gina, for taking the time. And thank you to our listeners who wrote in as well. We do appreciate it. Let's move on to our stories here, Joe. Why don't you start things off for us here?
I have more of a topic today than a story, Dave.
Okay.
And I have a couple of stories that we can link to, but there was a story on dark reading that was produced by Microsoft Security called The Rise of Social Engineering Fraud in Business Email Compromise.
Mm-hmm.
Let's leave aside the terrible headline for that.
Okay.
Because that's essentially all social engineering is. One of the lines in this article says that 90% of phishing attacks involve social engineering.
Hmm.
Again, I think that 100% of phishing attacks are social engineering attacks. But I think the more accurate thing, what this writer probably meant, was that 90% of incidences and attacks involve some social engineering element. It could be phishing. It could be business email compromise. And that's where they're going with this, is towards the business email compromise end of things.
Okay.
As I've said before on this and on this podcast and on other speaking events wherever I am, I think business email compromise is the king of social engineering attacks.
Hmm.
Number one, it produces very good results in terms of monetary gains for the criminals.
Hmm.
Very bad results for the person or the organizations being attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because it's coming from a trusted inside email account or now Teams accounts,
right?
Or any kind of other chat thing. We're going to talk about that here in a minute.
Okay.
So this article lists four groups that are out there doing things. And of course, Microsoft has these really cool naming conventions like Octo Tempest. And I think they go with some weather-based thing. I really think we need to go with insulting name for hacker groups, like Angry Weenies or something like that. Or I'm just making these up off the top of my
head. My favorite is, we've actually talked about this behind the scenes with my CyberWire editorial team, and my favorite is that if the Canadians had a name, it would be something like Apologetic Beaver.
Apologetic Beaver. That would be a good one. Yep.
Yeah.
Anyway, this Octo Tempest group is they are a group of native English speaking actors.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where they're based out of, but they are, their adversary in the middle is one of their techniques,
mm-hmm.
which is that there are multiple ways to accomplish this, but what they do is they present you with a fake web page or that's actually just a pass through for the actual logon service. It looks like it. It looks exactly like the logon service, but there's a server on the back end that's collecting your credentials and actually logging you in. Then if they have a one-time password requirement, for multi-factor authentication or an SMS code that's sent to your device, they'll ask you for that through the same interface. That's the attacker in the middle. They're also pretty good at social engineering, which I would say this is. And then SIM swapping is one of the things they have in their repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
SIM swapping can be absolutely devastating. If you are someone who is at risk for SIM swapping, you'll know it. I don't think somebody's going after SIM swapping to get into like your or my Twitter account, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But if you were somebody that had millions of dollars and you had a code being sent to your phone from your bank, someone's going after that. Mm. So find a different way to do multi-factor authentication.
And also put a code on your SIM.
Yes, put a code on your account at your cellular provider.
Right.
The next cool organization with malicious organization with a cool name is Diamond Sleet. These guys are have attacked the German software company JetBrains, which I know one of the things they develop is a an IDE for Python, which is an integrated development environment. If I can get malicious code into an integrated development environment, think of the havoc I could wreak.
Mm.
That would be terrible. Sangria Tempest, which is also called Finn, they target the restaurant industry to steal payment card data.
Mm.
The restaurant industry is a great place to, because when was the last time you went out to dinner and paid cash, Dave?
Yeah.
I haven't done it in years.
Yeah.
I haven't even done it at like a McDonald's in years.
Okay, right, I mean, sure.
I just don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Everything happens on a credit card. So if I can get inside of a point of sale system and sit there and watch credit card numbers come across, I'm going to exfiltrate a ton of data. Now, this isn't really business email compromise, but the way they do this is they get in by sending threatening email messages with malicious attachments claiming that they've been poisoned by the restaurant, food poisoning.
Mm.
They're victims of food poisoning. And the malicious attachments, of course, let them come in. They are out of Eastern Europe. And then finally, the fourth group here is Midnight Blizzard. This is a Russian group that is going after government targets, diplomatic entities, NGOs, and IT service providers. And they're attacking all across these folks all across the U.S. and Europe. They use Teams messages to send to try to get into your accounts. And they, if this is the same group, there's a group out there that impersonates Microsoft support.
Mm.
And comes in as the Teams person, or says they're Microsoft support, and they try to get you to cough up your credentials. Then they go inside to your network, because if you're using Microsoft 365 and your Teams gets compromised, that's your Microsoft 365 login.
Mm-hmm.
That's everything. Your Teams is not the only thing that just got compromised. Your email also just got compromised.
Right.
Bad stuff. So there's another article that I found from Marcus White that's on InfoSecurity Magazine.
Okay.
And of course, his big thing here, he's talking about the EA breach and the MGM resort hack, but the solution is multi-factor authentication.
Mm.
I think it's far past time for companies to, when they are authenticating their employees to their or their contractors, any of their customers, or not their customers, but their vendors, to their system, it's time to insist that your employees and all your vendors use something that's like UTF, or Universal Two-Factor, to log into your network. Something like the YubiKey or the Google Titan from the FIDO Alliance. There are tons of solutions out there. If you go to the FIDO Alliance's website, they have like 8 pages of vendors for these tools.
Right. Now, so there's no excuse.
Yeah. It's a lot of, I mean, this has grown. I mean, when you and I started talking about this, there were like maybe, there was one page of vendors and there was like maybe 10 of them on there.
Right.
Now there are 8 pages of vendors for solutions.
Yeah.
It's time to move on. It's time to move beyond username and password, and at a minimum, put Universal Two-Factor on your authentication system for your network for your enterprise network.
Right. I you're mentioning of people in the food service industry. It made me think about someone described a scam I saw on Reddit just a few days ago, and this was in Washington, D.C. Hmm. So imagine if you've ever been to Washington, D.C. and you've done any touristy kind of things, you're familiar with the National Mall, which is where all the museums are and the big monuments and all that sort of thing. And around the mall, there are lots of food trucks.
Yep.
So imagine you walk up to a food truck, actually an ice cream truck, right? Like the old Good Humor Man kind of ice cream truck, right? You walk up and you say to the person there who's in the truck, hey, I'd like 4 ice cream cones.
That sounds exactly like me.
Yeah.
You're speaking my language, Dave.
Right. And the person says, but sir, you're alone.
Right.
And you need 4 ice cream cones.
I turn to my wife and say, what do you want?
Right. Exactly. So you order 4 ice cream cones, and the person serves you up the ice cream cones. You hand them your credit card. They hand you the ice cream cones. And immediately, the ice cream truck speeds away.
Really? With my credit card?
No, you've gotten your credit card back.
Oh.
But the ice cream truck speeds away, and you have been charged $150.
Oh, okay.
For the 4 ice cream cones.
Right, the maximum.
Right.
The maximum they can do without a signature.
So whatever that is. Yeah. Yeah, that's what they do. Now, I heard about this scam. You know, I read this, and first thing I did was I laughed because I imagined, like, you know, like a scene from the Benny Hill Show or Mr. Bean or something, you know, like...
Jackety Sacks is playing in the background.
So, yeah, some, you know, some poor sap character who gets his money stolen by a, you know, a fake ice cream thing.
Now, Dave.
Yeah.
We frequently say, this is something that would work on me.
Yeah.
This is absolutely something that would work on me.
But I have to wonder how many times can this work, and... how hard would it be for law enforcement to track down a rogue ice cream truck?
Yeah, right? I don't know.
Are you hopping from town to town?
Are you changing your license plate every time you do this?
I mean, you could go, I guess, if you pull this off 10 times in one day, that's a good day.
Yeah.
You can move on to the next city or, I don't know, maybe you're living out of your ice cream truck. Anyway.
Yeah.
Who knows if it's real or not? But it was novel and new and not something I'd heard of before, so I thought I'd share.
Yeah, if that, you know, because what would happen to me is I would get a text message that said, the ice cream truck just charged you $150. And I'd be like, oh, no, they didn't. And I would be on the phone.
Right. Yeah.
You know, with the credit card issuer going, yeah, don't pay that. Here's what happened.
Right.
And what do I need to do? Do I need to file a police report? Because this seems really sketchy to me.
It seems like a short-term scam. But
it does.
Who knows? If it's even real, I don't know. But like I said, it tickled me, so I thought I'd share.
Yep.
That's a good story. Should I move on?
Yes, that's it for my story. I just want to encourage everybody to use... It's time to move on on the enterprise level to universal two-factor multi-factor authentication.
Gotcha.
Or something compatible. But I think UTF is probably the industry leader right now.
Yeah. All right, Joe. So my story this week actually doesn't come from any publication or anyone else. It's about me.
It's about you?
I got scammed.
You did?
I did.
It happens to all of us, Dave. Now I am not the only person on this show since we started doing this show who's been scammed.
Oh, I've talked about being scammed.
Oh, you've been scammed, but not since we started doing this show.
Yeah, I have. Remember I talked about there was a guy who... was on the side of the road.
Oh,
who thought
right.
He needed his car repaired.
Yeah, and but you just gave that guy $20.
Took me
bucks,
for
right?
$20. Yeah. But so I've been scammed again. This time it was on Facebook.
Oh no.
Yep. I heard someone this week describe Facebook as being like chemotherapy. It has its good uses, but mostly it poisons you.
I would agree with that 100%.
Yeah. So I'm on Facebook, minding my own business, and this thing scrolls by, and it says Catonsville online yard sale. Now, Joe, you and I live in the same community.
Yep.
You know as well as I do, Catonsville is right up the road from us.
It is indeed.
A few miles away, so it's a town that I'm very familiar with, and there's a message here from the Catonsville online yard sale, and it says, update, it's now the fifth day. And I'm urgently looking for the owners of this beautiful Tucker we picked up on the side of the road in Catonsville. Now, Joe, there are two pictures here. Describe Tucker.
Tucker looks like a very sad dog in a kennel.
Yeah.
With some food. I'm assuming this is a boy dog. I don't know, with a name like Tucker.
Yeah, who knows?
And he is laying down in one of them with his back against the cage. And the other one, he's kind of moping about inside the cage.
Yeah.
He's inside the kennel.
Very pretty but sad looking
yes.
dog. And says, Tucker's really depressed, not eating. We took them to the vet, and they're not chipped. Please help me bump this post so I can find the owner.
Mm-hmm.
So I did, right? I thought, now let me just say here, Joe, like you, I'm a dog lover.
Yep.
I have a dog. So this tugged at my heartstrings.
Of course it did.
And I thought to myself, well, I will share this and try to spread the word about Tucker, the lost dog.
Poor Tucker.
Let me tell you. I got pounced on, Joe. I got pounced on by my well-meaning friends who were like, Dave, this is a scam. This is a well-known scam. Anytime you see something like this in any of these online yard sale groups or anything that's for sale, if you see a lost dog or a lost cat, a lost pet in any of these for sale things, they're scams.
Huh.
And what happens is they post this. People like it and share it, and then they go back and edit the post to them selling something.
I see.
And so the thing they're selling gets populated by all these people who are helping them spread the word about the thing because they suckered you in with the poor lost dog.
I see.
Now, needless
to say— That is very creative.
It is. Needless to say, Joe, I was quite ashamed.
Yep. Well, that's okay, Dave. You didn't lose any money on this one.
I didn't lose any money, but Joe, I don't know if you know this, I host a podcast about not getting scammed.
Dave?
And I fell for this. First of all, how did I not know about this?
Right.
This was new to me. I don't think we've ever talked about this particular scam here.
I don't think I have seen it either.
But we have now.
Yep.
But I just want to share, like, I experienced firsthand the feelings of shame.
Right.
That so many people feel when they realize they've been scammed.
Right. It's like when I put my credit card number into the fake hotel website, Dave.
Yeah.
All it cost me was a new credit card. But fortunately, by the credit card provider, I can't remember which one it was. I think it was Capital One.
Yeah.
They declined the charge because they recognized it was fraudulent.
Ah, okay.
And then I realized when they declined it, and I actually went through a second time try to make sure everything's right. And he declined it again. And I get a text alert that goes, hey, there looks like there's some fraudulent activity. It took three things to happen before I went, oh, that was a one of those malicious Google ads that I clicked on.
I see.
And I'm not making a hotel reservation. I'm getting scammed.
Right.
So, yeah, it happens. I mean, and this is the exact reason I say when... Graham Cluley is talking about this a little bit in his interview today. Mm-hmm. This is the exact reason I say, don't think you won't fall for something.
Right.
Right. You will. And Dave, you're not stupid. You're not. I know you.
I felt pretty stupid, Joe.
I know you felt stupid. Trust me. I am keenly aware of how you, I know exactly how you felt.
Yeah.
But you got to come in here and tell the story when it happens.
I know.
And
a cute dog. I hope Tucker found his home.
That's just some somewhere.
I know there's no Tucker.
Right.
Tucker doesn't exist. And yet, in my head canon, I'm really hoping that Tucker found his family or whatever, you know, and is living his best canine life.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, that is my story. My shame-filled, embarrassed, stupid story. But... Thank you, Joe, for helping me not feel so bad about it.
Don't feel bad, Dave.
I'll do my best.
You're not stupid. You just you love dogs.
Yeah.
And you thought a dog needed help.
That's right.
And yep.
There it is. Okay. All right, Joe. It is time to move on to our catch of the day.
Dave, our catch of the day comes from Vance, who writes, hello, Dave and Joe. I really enjoy your show and listen, along with all the other N2K ones.
Oh, that's very nice.
I've been meaning to send you the attached file for a while. It's a scanned copy of a letter I received via snail mail last year, which I found to be pretty amusing, a pretty amusing variant of an age-old scam.
Hmm.
I haven't lived at this address shown for decades. The only reason I received it is my sister still lives there.
Oh.
So this is like... you live in the house you grew up in, right?
That's true, I do, yes.
And my brother still lives in the house that I grew up in.
Yep.
So he never comes to me and says, hey, Joe, here's your mail. I think right. If he sees something for me, he just throws it away.
Okay. No, it's true, though. Occasionally, mail for my brother or my father or my sister will come to my house, which is now my house. That does happen.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, please keep doing what you're doing. And it's a... it's a very official-looking letter, Dave. It comes from B&B Associates, LLP, in London. And it's addressed to Vance. I won't put his actual address on here because that would... Vance sent this in confidence, I'm sure.
Sure. All right. Well, it goes like this. It says, dear Vance, my name is James Brown. Joe. I'm a partner at Brown & Brown Associates, LLP, in United Kingdom. Apologies if my letter came to you as a surprise, since there's been no previous correspondence between us. There is an unclaimed permanent life insurance policy held by our deceased client. The transaction pertains to an unclaimed life insurance policy savings monetary deposit in the sum of $11,550,300 United States dollars.
That's a lot of money.
The policyholder was one of our clients, the late Dr. Marcus Jones, who was a real estate investor and precious stone dealer. He was a COVID-19 victim who died about 2 years ago. Since his death, no one has come forward for the claim, and all our efforts to locate his relatives have proved unsuccessful. The insurance company code stipulates that insured permanent policies not claimed must be turned over to the abandoned property division of the state after 2 to 3 years. Therefore, I ask for your consent to be in partnership with me for the claim of this policy benefit in view of the striking similarity in the last name and nationality with the deceased. If you will permit me to add your name to the policy, all proceeds will be processed on your behalf. I wish to point out that I want 10% of this money to be shared among charity organizations, while the remaining 90% will be shared between us. This is 100% risk-free.
Sure it is.
I do have all necessary documentation to expedite the process in a highly professional and confidential manner. I will provide all the relevant documents to substantiate your claim as the beneficiary. This claim requires a high level of confidentiality, and it may take up to 20 business days from the date of receipt of your consent. For more details, please contact me. Your earliest response to this matter would be highly appreciated. Best regards, James Brown. You know, if only this was the great James Brown, right?
I mean, it
doesn't get any cooler. How cool would it be to get a letter from the actual James Brown, from the dearly departed
James Brown.
The great James Brown.
He's no longer with us.
Yes, who I'm sure whatever impersonation I was trying to do did not do him justice.
No.
So forgive me.
No. But, you know, I don't know. That's one of the things about James Brown is that he had a distinctive voice.
He sure did.
Man, he was great.
Yeah. He sure was.
they don't call him the Godfather of Soul for nothing.
That's right.
Right. This email is well worded.
That's true.
It's not a lot of grammatical errors in here.
No.
Everything looks good. I mean, except for the fact that Vance is right. This is an obvious scam.
Yeah.
You reach out to these guys and start talking to them. They're just going to hit you up for money. And they're going to keep asking you for money until one of two things happens. You run out of money or you realize it's a scam.
Right.
That's it.
Right, and they're tugging at your heartstrings, trying to demonstrate that they're good folks. Saying they want to give 10% of the money goes to charity.
Right. If this was actually a life insurance policy, there would be no cut for anybody but the beneficiary.
Right.
And that would be solved through probate court.
Correct.
So, yeah, this you wouldn't have to split your life insurance proceeds with anybody.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you to Vance for sending that in. We do appreciate you taking the time. Of course, we would love to hear from you. If there's something you'd like us to consider for the show, you can email us. It's hackinghumans@n2k.com. We were talking about mitigating cyber threats to your organization before your users even see them. The new Phish ER Plus from KnowBefore was developed to help you supercharge your organization's email security defenses. How? You get a unique crowdsourcing advantage. More than 10 million highly trained KnowBefore end users from across the globe catch and report malicious email that makes it through all the filters. KnowBefore's Threat Lab then validates it with AI and with human researchers. Phish ER Plus blocks phishing threads other tools have missed and proactively removes them from your users' inboxes. Not quite time travel, but we think you'll agree it's a vital capability in any InfoSec professional's arsenal. Visit KnowBefore.com/products/phish-ER-plus to learn more. That's KnowBefore.com/products/phish-ER-plus. And we thank KnowBefore for sponsoring our show. All right, Joe, I recently had the pleasure of speaking with Graham Cluley. Of course, he is the co-host of the Smashing Security podcast, along with our dear friend Carol Terrio, who's been a regular on our show in the past.
She is.
So Graham agreed to come on the show to talk about some of the recent trends and online scams that he's had his eye on. Here's my conversation with Graham Cluley. Well, Graham, welcome back to Hacking Humans. It is great to have you back on the show. I think it's been too long.
It has been too long. Thank you for allowing me back through the door. What a lovely studio it is here. So cozy. Fantastic.
Isn't it
thank
lovely?
You.
Yeah.
I love
you.
It.
I love what we've done with the place.
Yeah.
So I want to touch base with you, but I've been reading a lot of the articles that you write, your blogs. You do some writing for other companies who hire you to write security research for them. And then, of course, the work that you do on Smashing Security with Carol. I wanted to touch base with you, check in, as it were, on some of the trends that you're tracking when it comes to these online scams that are hitting so many people around the world. Can we start off at a high level here? I mean, what are some of the sort of broad directions that you see things going in these days?
Well, I think what we're seeing is really a reflection of these desperate times that we're living in. Everyone's feeling the pinch. Economies are on the downturn. Everyone, you know, cost of living crisis, everything's getting expensive. And so, of course, if a scam arrives in your inbox promising that you can make millions and millions or even a few thousand, chances are that you're going to be more and more likely to fall for it.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's funny because when you started describing that, I was thinking of the tough times for the scammers themselves. But I think you make a really good point here, which is that when times are tough, perhaps our skeptical thinking gets put on a shelf because we're looking for anything to make life a little easier.
Well, I mean, I'm speaking to you from the United Kingdom at the moment, and we've had huge problems with our energy bills. I don't know what it's like over your side of the pond, but electricity and gas prices gone through the roof. It's quite astonishing how much they've gone up. And so if you receive a message which claims to come from the UK government offering you a discount on your energy bills under some energy bill support scheme, for instance, you're more likely to click on that link and maybe not have your normal careful perusal of the URL or exercise enough caution before accepting it. And so many other things as well. So there's so many things which are emptying our pockets and draining our wallets and our bank accounts. So we're looking to save every penny we can. And the scammers are taking advantage of this. And they're also, of course, huge rise in the number of cryptocurrency-related scams. Mm. You can't turn on Twitter without seeing some fake Elon Musk or another celebrity who appears to be promoting some kind of cryptocurrency scam, asking you to make an investment, and of course, you're not going to see your money back.
It's amazing to me how lasting those scams have been, because they're not new, and yet you would think word would get around, but they're still working.
Well, yes. Unfortunately, we do keep on raising awareness of these things. We keep on sending out alerts. We keep on warning people about these types of scams and say, look, tell other people in your family, watch out for these things. But again, I think it's a reflection of desperate times. And it's not just necessarily desperation financially. It can also be desperation romantically. Mm. And we've seen an increase in these pig butchering scams as well, where the scammers appear to be prepared to spend months convincing you that you're in a romantic relationship. And then, only then, they begin to drop in comments that, it's wonderful, this online relationship that we're having, but if you really want to make some money, there's this great scheme which I've been doing. Maybe you should put some money into it too.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend just about a week ago who she has an uncle who is into these scammers. They've taken about $400,000 from him, and they keep coming back for more. And the family, of course, is trying to do everything they can to put an end to it, but this person believes, they cannot convince this person that the romance isn't real, that the opportunities aren't real. And so the money just keeps on flowing. And I mean, it's really that human element, isn't it? That we all, at the end of the day, as you say, we all want to be loved, and it just overpowers our critical thinking.
There's only one thing that we want more than love, and that's a decent Wi-Fi connection, right? I mean, but once you've got those sorted, you think your life is looking pretty good. So people are, people are desperate. Everyone wants to be loved. Every month, I receive emails from women who believe that they're in a relationship with Hollywood heartthrob and hard man Jason Statham all the time. I've got this page on my website where I'm talking about the Jason Statham romance scam. So many women have left messages saying that they've been contacted by this guy as well, and they believe it's real. And he said that he's broken up with his hot model girlfriend, and unfortunately, he still can't afford to get his webcam fixed. But he's chatting to them online, and they and they are giving him a huge amount of money. I'm sure it's not just one guy doing this. I think there's a whole bunch of guys somewhere out in Lord knows what part of the world pretending to be Jason Statham. And for whatever reason, he is the man that these women are going for.
Interesting.
It's actually absolutely heartbreaking, because I think a lot of these people deep down, they do suspect, well, maybe it is a scam, because it is a little bit strange that he's never come round to visit, and he's never telephoned me, and he's never done a Zoom call, and he hasn't got enough money for his flight back home. But there's a tiny chance that it's true. It's a tiny chance that person who contacted them really might be the person who fulfills their life and fills whatever empty hole they have in their existence with romance. And so that's what they want to cling to. And so they don't listen to their family and friends.
You know, you bring up a really interesting element here, which is that you being someone who is well-known when it comes to cybersecurity, and your name is one of the ones that comes up regularly if people search on that, I think that's probably a big part of why you get so many people reaching out to you for help. Can you give us a sense for the kinds of things that people reach out to you about?
Other than Jason Statham, Mark Ruffalo, the guy who used to be the Incredible Hulk or is in the Avengers movies, that's a common one. But generally, it doesn't include celebrities. Generally, people who are contacting me are a victim of what are now being called pig butchering scams, where there are these gangs of people, often out in the Far East, and there's a story or two about them as to how those people are hired, which is horrific. But, there is organized criminal gangs who are targeting people who've got money in the West, trying to convince them into romance. The story, by the way, about the creation of these gangs is there have been tales in the past that these people who are actually working in these gangs are actually slaves.
Yeah.
People who are being held against their will and being told to participate in these criminal gangs scamming people in the West. I mean, it's horrific what appears to be going on, but someone is making an awful lot of money as a result. The other kind of thing which people contact me with is actually when I think they are the scammers themselves. So people contact me saying, oh, my wife or my girlfriend, she's gone missing. I don't know how to contact her. I'd really like to break into her Facebook account and see who she's been messaging. Can you help me do that? Or can you break into her Instagram account? So they present it as, this is a real emergency. Can you do this?
right.
And of course I can't, and I wouldn't even if I could. But there's a lot of people who try and pull on the heartstrings to break into an account. And you have to think, is this a jealous ex-boyfriend or partner or some other kind of identity fraudster at work?
When you do get the sense that it is someone who's genuinely been taken advantage of here, I mean, do you ever respond?
Oh, I know it's going to shock you, David, but I actually do have a heart. And so,
really?
I know you've known me for a while, and you think all the evidence suggests the contrary. But no, I do, because I'm a big softie, really. And so I will say to them, look, I think this is really unlikely that Jason Statham or whoever it is, I think, you know, or go and view this webpage where you'll see there are dozens of other women who believe they're in a relationship with him as well. What are the chances, seriously, that he's chosen you to be, you know, rather than his hot model girlfriend? So I try and help them. I try and put them in the right direction. I say, look, if you really think about this, it probably isn't true. And, you know, take care. But there's only so much you can do. Those people, I don't help the people who are trying to break into accounts because, you know, they're dodgy. They're not worth my time, are they? But the ones who are innocently scammed, you've got to have a heart for, because it could so easily be your auntie who falls for these. I mean, you know, all of these people who are being scammed, they are somebody's auntie, someone's brother, someone's sister-in-law. So, you know, we need to take care of each other.
Do you have any thoughts on what it might take to move the needle on this?
It's a depressing thought, but maybe everyone needs to be scammed at least once, hopefully not to a great degree, before you actually learn. I mean, it's... I do believe there's no one who can't be scammed. I think people who think, oh, it would never happen to me, I think sometimes they might be the most susceptible to these kind of attacks. If you have that kind of approach, even though, for instance, you and I work in this field.
Oh, yeah.
I suspect
it's happened to me.
Has it?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
What, you and Jason or someone else?
I have been tricked into turning over my credentials once, and it was a very straightforward kind of thing where I got a text message from someone I know that said, "Hey, you should check out this video of you." And there was a link, and I clicked through, and the link was a Facebook login, and I logged in.
Oh,
and
boy.
That was it. Right. And I didn't think twice about it. This was a few years ago. And so, in the heat of that moment of wanting to see what the video of me was, and in retrospect, they were purposefully vague about what the video was, right? Which, of course, got my anxiety up.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? Because who knows? I don't know. Yeah. And so they got me. Now, fortunately, I realized pretty quickly, and I was able to change my credentials, and I didn't lose any money or anything like that. But to your point, if somebody wants you bad enough, they will find the thing that you are so interested in is that it will be irresistible.
Or their message only has to land at the right time. A time when you're either vulnerable or you're distracted. Many of us are working from home these days, you know, much more, even though the pandemic is supposedly over and all the rest of it. A lot of us now are working from home, which means you've got craziness going on at home, especially if you've got young kids or if you've got a partner who's telling you to load the dishwasher or take the bins out and you've got phones going and all the you're trying to manage your life and do your job. And these messages are coming in and your bosses are contacting you all hours of the day. And it's so easy on your mobile phone to click on a link and boom, you've made a mistake. So you only have to be distracted for a short time to fall for these things. And sometimes the social engineering is so clever. And sometimes it doesn't start with an email, right? Or even a text message. I saw a scam. It was actually, the scam was to ultimately install ransomware onto a school's network. And the way in which it began was the secretary of the school would get a phone call from someone claiming to be from the government and saying, "It's the Department of Education here. We are sending your head teacher this form, which needs to be replied, yada, 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 yada. Please, can you tell them to look out for it? It needs to be responded to today." So the receptionist goes to the head teacher, says, "There's this email coming through from this department. You have to reply to it. I have to open the PDF or whatever it may be." And of course, bam, they are infected.
Right.
So sometimes that's how it happens now. It will start with a phone call. And because we're so used to attacks happening via the internet, your guard is down when the phone call comes through and it gives it a legitimacy, which maybe you hadn't previously expected.
Well, before I let you go, for our listeners, in terms of your bits of advice, your top tips for folks who are outside of the cybersecurity industry to best protect themselves What are your recommendations?
Oh, golly. Obviously, always be careful about links that you click on. Install a password manager. That's a great tip because, of course, if you do get taken to a bogus website, the password manager won't offer to enter your password for you. So that should raise your suspicion a little bit. It's like, well, why isn't my password manager allowing me to enter my Facebook password, for instance, on this particular domain? Reason is, it's not the real Facebook. So do that as well. Be careful about the attachments you open. Be careful if you get a Word document and it says, oh, this Word document is encrypted. You have to disable security on Word to access the, you know, it's like, oh my goodness. And also, just look after your heart, you know? Be a little bit careful. If someone contacts you out of the blue, be suspicious about that kind of start to a relationship. That's not to say necessarily you are safer on dating apps, because some of these scammers will be lurking there as well. But always, always be careful about the personal information you share. And never, ever send someone money unless you've actually met them and you're convinced you're having a real relationship with them.
Joe, what do you think?
I think it's great to have Graham back on the show. That's what I think.
That's right.
Interesting that Graham's position on this is pretty interesting. The bad broad economic situation makes us more vulnerable to this. I thought he was going exactly where you thought he was going with this, that it incentivizes people to be more frequent scammers. But it doesn't just do that. It also makes us more vulnerable. I could not agree with that more. The first scam that Graham talks about is a scam that targets Brits with the promise of lowering your energy bills. It's interesting that the costs have gone up and the scammers know this. So we say this all the time. They follow the news. They know what's going on.
Yep.
When you see something, it makes sense. That shouldn't give it any more weight to you, but it's going to. It's going to work. You made an excellent point about the crypto scams, that these things should be gone by now, right? That we shouldn't be talking about investing in crypto as a scam anymore. People should be wise to this, but they're not. They're still falling for it. The pig butchering, I get. The pig butchering is like a romance scam with a crypto scam as the icing.
Right.
So I get that. You by the time you're getting hit with the crypto part of that, you're already months deep into a romance scam.
Right.
And it's really tough to get people out of that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the romance scams are which kind of leads to my next point, the romance scams are devastating to watch. You talk about your friend who recently had somebody in their family lose $400,000 to a romance scam.
Right.
Devastating. There needs to be something that we can do. I don't know. Maybe there's something I don't know if you could get a power of attorney. You could, I don't know if I'm just shooting at the wall here. I don't know. But something has to be done about this.
Yeah.
To protect people.
That's part of it. I mean, it's hard to take away someone's ability to manage their own money.
Right. But if they're getting scammed, the thing is that if you actually take away their ability to manage their own money and you don't let them send more money to the scammer will very quickly go away.
Right.
And that problem will resolve itself almost instantaneously. But yeah. Within weeks, I would say.
Mm.
They're not going to spend money if they don't think, or they're not going to spend time if they don't think there's any more money involved. Mm-hmm. They're on to the next victim. The Jason Statham scam, that makes me wonder if this is the new Brad Pitt scam, right? Because right. We've heard about this with Brad Pitt, or I think I'm dating Brad Pitt. I like what Graham says. There's a tiny chance that this is Jason Statham. It's smaller than your chance of winning the Powerball lottery, but it's still a chance, right?
Right. You mentioned Powerball. I mean, that's how Powerball works.
That's exactly right.
People say, well, I know it's a mathematical impossibility, but somebody wins.
It's not a mathematical impossibility. It's a mathematical highly unlikeliness.
Okay, Joe.
Let me
put it this way. The Powerball is a tax on people who don't understand math.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay. But I had somebody one time argue that he said, the thing about the lottery is when you buy a ticket, your chances of winning are only slightly greater than if you hadn't bought a ticket.
Mm.
And I said, my argument to that was, no, they're infinitely greater because your chance of winning without buying a ticket is zero. And anything divided by zero is undefined or infinite,
mm-hmm.
right? But you're right. It's really, really small. And it's not worth the money. Don't buy lottery tickets. The lottery is just another scam. I get angry when I think about it.
Okay. We'll move on.
But I think it's interesting that that people call Graham or get in touch with him and ask him to break into people's social media accounts.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I've never been approached with that request.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, it has.
Really?
Not very, not nearly as often as what Graham describes here.
Right.
But yes, I have gotten those requests, and my take on it is that most of the time it's like someone who is, stalking someone and want to get into their social media, and they're trying to make it appear as though they're just trying to help someone out.
That would be my first guess. Is that the other thing is that I would think it was somebody trying to take hold of an account to gain access to a page. Like we talk about people doing that frequently.
Yeah.
You get a page with a lot of followers. In fact, I've got someone in my life that I'm worried about this with now because there's a page with a lot of followers on it, and I think that page can be targeted by malicious actors.
Yeah, we get letters, Joe. We get letters. Yep. We get lots and lots of letters. And some of the people who write us letters, have serious issues. And sometimes it's really sad.
Yeah.
You wish you could help everybody, but it's just not possible.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, if you've lost control of your Facebook account, good luck getting it back. Best bet is just to go create a new Facebook account.
Right.
And forget about it, because there is no help from any of these large tech organizations.
Nope.
Like I said before, earlier, and like we learned today with your story, there is something that will work on every one of us.
Yeah.
What I really found interesting was the particular story that Graham told about the ransomware attack that started with a phone call. What a clever, I don't want to say great, but clever, because it's not, it's awful. A clever way to get somebody to look forward to your malicious attachment and make them much more likely to open it up.
Right.
They create the sense of urgency by saying, hey, this is something that needs to be done today. We're from the Department of Education. If this is at a university, then the Department of Education might be providing funding. So who knows what the underlying thing is. But it doesn't surprise me that was really effective at getting it to work. You call the secretary, you say, you lie to her or him, and you say, this email needs to be answered today. Make sure that the head of the school takes care of it, please. That's it.
Yeah.
The game's over as soon as he opens a malicious attachment.
Right. All right. Well, our thanks to Graham Cluley for joining us. And of course, if you love our podcast, chances are you will love Smashing Security.
Yep.
So please do check that out. Graham co-hosts that with Carol Terrio, and it's definitely worth your time. It's a fun one. So again, we appreciate Graham taking his time for us.
And they often have, don't they have Maria on there frequently too?
Maria is, I believe, Maria is their number one guest.
Yes.
Yes. That's right. I'm number two.
Excellent.
but it's a dumb and distant number two, yeah. Maria.
Well, don't worry. I've only been on two episodes of the show. I'm way back there.
There you go. We want to thank all of you for listening. And of course, we want to thank our sponsors at KnowBefore. They are experts in helping users do the right thing through new school security awareness training. Well, that is our show. We want to thank everyone for listening. Our thanks to the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute for their participation. You can learn more at isi.jhu.edu. A quick reminder that N2K Strategic Workforce Intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. Learn more at n2k.com. Our executive producer is Jennifer Ivan. This show is mixed by Elliot Peltzman. Our executive editor is Peter Kilpie. I'm Dave Bittner.
And I'm Joe Kerrigan.
Thanks for listening.